in the yeshiva, Seder Pachad Yitzchak, Rav Hutner was Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin for many years, and he died in, I think, 1981, or 1980, if I recall correctly. And there's a very famous letter to a student of his, who became a, went out to Korea, I don't remember exactly what Korea was, and it's a letter written in Hebrew, but he uses English terms in the middle of the Hebrew letter to precisely pinpoint what he means to say. And he says that in our perspective, meaning his understanding of the way things should be, the when a person has a career, it's not considered to be, and it's a very important letter, it's very important to see, it's not considered to be a, should a person consider his life to be a double life, which is, he has one life, which kind of like what Moshe says, he has one life which is the life in which he makes a living, and then he has another life, which is the spiritual life, where he actually is involved in all sorts of, you know, things which have to do with Avodas Hashem. But rather, says Rav Hutner, one is supposed to have a broad life, meaning that one's policies and one's attitudes and one's Avodas Hashem extend not just to the areas of learning or davening, but also extend equally and are all part of the same gestalt, the same whole, to one's career and one's work life. And he gives him Marshall, he says, there are some people who have two houses. They have a house in the city and a summer home. And there are other people who have houses which have several rooms in them. So one can lead one's life as if one has two houses, right? Which is the way many people lead their lives. In other words, they have one house which is the Beis Medrash, and another house which is the work world, what?
Computer room.
Or the, what?
Computer room.
The computer room, or the room where the television is. And so those are their two houses, and so they live with those things which are as kind of a paradox. Whereas the person who has two rooms in the same house, they're all part of the same milieu, the same way of living, the same way of life. So Rav Hutner says, and the way he perceives a person's career is that a person's career has to be one in which it is a seamless continuation and inseparable from his Avodas Hashem in the Beis Medrash. This is not what Rav Moshe said yesterday. Rav Moshe clearly looks at Parnasa as Parnasa, a means of accomplishing sustenance, and therefore the bare minimum which is necessary in order to accomplish sustenance is what you should do, and no more if it can be avoided. Whereas according to Rav Hutner, it's not like that. A person's career is also an expression of his Avodas Hashem. Says the Rebbe that Rav Dessler, in the first Baal Milcha Milyo, not a contradiction to Rav Dessler, we learned about not setting up the BA program in Gaten, but a very important Rav Dessler, the name of Rav Yisrael Salanter, he said that there is a Medrash, I think, maybe it's a Zohar, which says about Chanoch. Chanoch was one of the people who appears in Parshas Bereishis. And it says Chanoch was a very holy kind of guy, and therefore he was taken to heaven, right? Just like Eliyahu Navi, he was taken alive to heaven when he was relatively young, at the age of 365, which back then was, you know, considered to be like mere trial. So the Gemara said, this Medrash said, that Chanoch was a cobbler. Yeah, obviously he slipped through the yeshiva system. So he became a cobbler instead. And it says that he was, Chanoch was mistaking minolim, he was fixing shoes, umyached yichudim, and he was unifying unification. Now, unification, usually is meant, it's taken as an esoteric Kabbalistic term, which has to do with thinking thoughts and meditating about the names of God while one is involved in one's, divine service, one in davening, maybe in the middle of learning, in a time when a person takes their time to meditate, that's normally what miyachid yichudim means. But Rabbi Shaul Salanter, who was founded in the Muslim movement, says that's not what it means in this case. What it means here is that what is the yichud? A yichud means the unity of heavens and earth. That can be done in a mystical way, unifying heavens and earth with all sorts of Kabbalistic formulae, but it can also be done in a very pragmatic way. How is Chanoch unifying heavens and earth? When he made a shoe, he made a shoe with the intent that that this shoe should be the very best possible shoe, the very best from shoe to walk in, the very most comfortable shoe, the shoe which would be the sturdiest and longest lasting, which could make for the benefit of his customer. By having that in mind when doing his work in and of itself was a manifestation of the connection of the divine with the mundane, being able to instill the idea of Kedusha, meaning the idea of doing something for the right purpose, into the work which he was doing. That's what Rabbi Sol's father said. It's a very, very powerful message, this message Rabbi Sol is putting into the Chanoch Miyachi Yichurim, and I once saw an article, I believe it was in the paper called Ellen McCarroth, which is translated to English as Return to the Source. And a fellow wrote an article, I think it's there, but Rav Dessler also speaks about it also in the first Bar Mitzvah Mrio, how you can have two people. For example, I believe the example that Ellen McCarroth chooses is you have two bakers. You have two bakers. By the way, I have to tell you, in New York, it's almost impossible to get good bread. I don't know if you're aware of that. But in Chicago, we had there was a chain called Breadsmith, which actually had a franchise, and they had a good franchise, kosher franchise, and they made fantastic, fantastic bread. So if anybody wants to open a franchise in Muncie, which I'm sure will be successful, this is a great idea. Get the franchise from Muncie for the Breadsmith and open it up, and that will be fantastic, because all the bread
in Muncie is
they have a kosher?
Yeah.
So it's a great idea. Anyway, so but theoretically, you know, we're wanting to be able to get good bread. So they can have two bakers in the city. Two bakers who are baking that, two bakers who are both on bread. They're both baking identical, you know, honey wheat bread. One of their good bread. They're both baking for the same honey wheat, or honey white bread, which is, and tastes fantastic. It has a great crust. It says amazing sauce inside.
Rabbi, it's close to lunch. I think most of you are already hungry.
Well, you're not saying I'm hungry. It is tantalizing and appealing, and everybody really wants to go and have as much as they possibly can of this place.
Let's go.
One of these guys, it's a bit far to go to Chicago for lunch, but one of these guys is going straight to heaven, and the other guy was the identical thing. I don't believe he's straight to hell, but he's not going to heaven as a result. Why? Because it's all a question of attitude. This is a very, very powerful idea. It's all a question of attitude. The first guy, Reuben, let's call him, he bakes the bread which he bakes it with the intent of making the best possible product, which will taste the best, which will provide the best nutrients and nourishment, and which will make the person happy because he buys it in a beautiful store and it gets wonderful service, and therefore that person will be able to function on a much higher level and be much happier in his life because of his experience in breastmith. And that was his idea, is to design the breastmith, to provide a customer with the best possible bread. And, of course, if it's the best possible bread, he has to charge a significant price for it. You know, there's a lot of overhead. There's a lot of overhead, there's a lot of expenses, and there's his own property made in order to come home and feed his family. But his entire drive is to do chesed, is to serve humanity in his baking bread. He just needs to have money in order to continue to do so. The other fellow, Shimon is our classic American capitalist. He frankly could not care less about what nutrition and what pleasure the customer gets. He really wants to provide that quality product because he knows quality products sell. And people enjoy buying good bread. And he can make more money selling good bread. And people enjoy coming into a good, appealing store and getting good service. And he can make money providing that service. So he's charging the same price in the same store for the same bread as the first guy, but the first guy's attitude is one of chesed. He's a giver. The second guy's attitude is one which doesn't entail any chesed at all. In fact, he's more of a taker than a giver. So the person has to bake bread. No matter what, there's got to be bakers in the world. So he's going to be a baker with the attitude of chesed, which is, like David HaMelech said, I think it's on Melch. So Marty Olam Chesed, Ibon of the world will be built on Chesed. Or he could be a baker like the other guy, who's in it for the take, wants to make the most money they possibly can in order to be able to live the best lifestyle they can, and it just happens to be they finally figured out that if you sell quality products, you actually have a higher markup than if you sell non-quality products. Right? This, by the way, is the second approach. As I said, is the basis of American capitalism, which is why American capitalism is not an optimal Torah system. Because the idea of American capitalism is based on the assumption that if you build a better mousetrap, you will make more money. Not if you build a better mousetrap, then you will help your customer catch more money. So therefore, it's not based on the premise of chesed, but on the premise of more efficient making of money. But so to say, so the same two people, with their careers, one of their careers is packing incidental to their avodah Hashem, and maybe even is detrimental to their avodah Hashem, because they're there to make as much money as possible. Whereas the second fellow, on the contrary, he is there to do as much chesed with the world as possible. It could be the same breath, the same price, but the first guy, his entire attitude is chesed, the other guy's entire attitude is trying to gain. As Rav Dessler makes a very interesting point in this respect. He says, for this reason, it's a questionable point, but it's a very interesting one. He says, for this reason, we find a chazal works. I don't know if this may come as a shock to you. Unlike us rabbis today who don't work, thank God, my father said that I have taken a very good, I have an advanced degree in work avoidance. So unlike us rabbis who don't work, back then the rabbis used to actually work, right? And they used to usually take menial jobs. There used to be ditch diggers, wood choppers, water carriers, and so on and so forth. So if that's that, kind of, I'm paraphrasing. He said, look, a ditch digger makes $10 an hour, right?
He does?
Assuming. Oh.
He's a good ditch digger.
Yeah, so the... A lawyer makes, a lousy lawyer makes $250 an hour, right? A good lawyer can make $600 an hour. So could a chazal, they're a pretty smart chazal. We assume that they're pretty smart. So couldn't they, instead of becoming ditch diggers, couldn't they become lawyers or doctors or anything of that sort, which makes rocket scientists? Well, rocket scientists probably don't make that much money. But,
not
you know, what?
Not anymore. Computers do their work for
them. Yeah, so the, so couldn't they do something which would make them much more money and much more efficiently?
Yeah.
So what?
I'm just thinking in less bittul zman in terms of the
amount of
money.
Less expenditure, lower overhead. So you said, of course they could. But a person in this world has to be, as he puts it, a giver and not a taker. And it's remotely possible, but it's highly unlikely that if you have a lawyer which charges you, say, $600 an hour, which means $10 a minute, that whatever they're providing for you, is that $10 a minute is actually worth the value of that $10. It's possible, but it's extremely unlikely, and you certainly have no way of knowing if the value of the good or the product or the service being delivered is higher in proportion to the amount investment which the buyer of or person who's your client or patient is putting into this relationship. He says, in terms of physical labor, it's much easier to tell how much I'm producing, and I can undercharge the person. I can say, you know what, I produced more than $10 worth today, and I'm not looking for overtime. I want to make sure that I'm a giver more than a taker. And I can quantitatively measure that. As opposed to a job which has to do with me using my mind, selling my brain, so to speak, I'm never going to be able to prove that actually I have given more return for the money that person has invested, so that I, in the next, in the sum total, I am a taker and not a giver. You see that? Ooh. Yes. Okay. Does anybody disagree with that? Everybody's so quiet today. If you guys continue to be quiet, I'm just going to fall asleep.
Said you know.
I'm very good at that. I actually, if you listen to enough tapes, I have a lot of tapes on the internet. If you listen to my Yerushalmi tapes, there's 750 of them. So you'll see that you'll find enough of them in which I fall asleep in the middle of talking. It's a rare knack. Yeshiva Bracha requires this over time. The knack of falling asleep while standing and the knack of falling asleep while talking. I can do both.
See, I did while standing before.
What?
I did while standing before. You know, doing snichot is painful,
right,
for such a
short
one.
So you do it standing and you can actually do while you're talking. It's quite a little bit embarrassing when you're supposed to be talking. Because, first of all, you know, everybody's kind of polite. They don't want to wake you up because you droop off. But besides that, sometimes as you're falling asleep while you're talking, you start speaking absolute gibberish.
Yeah.
And then, when you kind of snap out of it, when you realize, uh-oh, what did I just say? And then you have to somehow try, and this is where Talmudic skills are very valuable, you have to somehow try and connect what you're saying in that state of gibberish to the actual, the material which you're trying to cover at the time. This is not the... This is not always... not always possible, but one does make valiant attempts to do that. Anyway, so the idea that Rav Dess was saying, it's a very, very powerful idea that a person has to make sure to take a profession, whatever it is, where they're more of a giver than they are a taker. And it's more possible to make that assumption if you're doing a profession in which you're using your own hands to do work, or like whatever it is, where you're in physical labor than one which you're not.
So what would be the sort of translation of this when you have so much of what is produced and consumed nowadays is insubstantial, is virtual, it has very relative significance and importance. And see, the status of someone who's a lawyer in a lot of lawyers, when at the law school, for example, there are a lot of guys who, you know, you can joke that they're carrying all their books like this because they were practicing for what they were going to do after they got out of law school, which is wait tables. And it's because there's so many of them, and it doesn't really say anything for someone to be a lawyer other than socially. It doesn't necessarily say something about, because the whole mechanism of the institution is what necessarily makes for the quote-unquote giving and taking, not necessarily the actual nature of the job itself. You're at a firm where in this thing you do, it's a lot, this role you take in the process of a contract being written for a company designates that you have this much money. I mean, literally books discussing this kind of thing about what one, in terms of codes of conduct, what one should be doing and charging in terms of these things. It is designated by the profession that this service costs this much. Regardless of who you are as a person.
That's a good point. I don't have an answer to your question. I mean, you're making a statement more than making a
point. I guess how I would rephrase it so to be a question is how exactly would this translate to now, wherein there's so much that it's a matter of very fudgy.
It's a good question, and it's very hard to answer if there is any answer at all. But I can tell you, if you read my article, not to make you read my articles, but I suggest them very highly.
Rabbi doesn't fall asleep in writing, does he?
Sometimes.
For a couple of hours.
That's the great thing about word processors. You
edit those out.
Edit those out, right?
You
have
like 2 pages of period.
The fellow Dr. Nathan Birnbaum, who was a famous Baal Tshuva of the early 20th century, who when he advocated that Jews should leave large cities and form farming communities, not just in Eretz Yisrael, but even in Chutzlar.
Well, Amish, yeah?
It's not a bad idea. The Amish are pretty frum, have you noticed that?
They're very frum, actually.
And Amish.
So that's the case. So were they to do so, he said, then the agricultural or agrarian or rural lifestyle is much more suited for the ideal Torah form of life than metropolitan, cosmopolitan, city life, which is very difficult to square away with ideal Torah lifestyle.
Hamish.
It didn't actually work. He lived in Germany, in the 20s and 30s, they didn't actually start migrating back to the farm. But
we went there by the wagon load.
The idea is a very interesting idea, that actually Judaism has a problem with life in the city, with conspicuous consumption and the competition
modern
for resources.
Modern
society.
Pol Pot.
What?
Pol Pot had a problem with it as well.
Well, I don't think he said that we traveled to Cambodia. I wasn't
going to. No, he wanted
to have society
become completely agriculturalized. Right. Yeah, also we don't advocate killing people in order to accomplish that.
Yeah, right.
In order to accomplish our that goal.
I wasn't saying he also had this idea. That's all. I don't know.
So maybe right back to Birnbaum's writing. That's how we figure it out. So ideally speaking, you're supposed to have a career in which you're going to be able not just to make a living, like Rav Moshe says, but according to Rav Hodner and Rav Dessler elsewhere, is one in which you can contribute in a meaningful way, which can be considered to be a chesed, as opposed to taking away from what society and you know, aggrandizing oneself.
Cultivating a spiritual, you know, thing.
Cultivating spiritual aspects of your work.
Which should be one that cultivates the spiritual side of you and not simply...
Right. Which is a very hard thing to do, again, as I said, the entire American milieu militates against that type of attitude, because everything, and not that communism is any better, communism is worse, let me make that clear, I mean, this is not a plug for Marxism, but the American capitalistic society is based, especially if you're a Republican, is based on the assumption that you know, people are only motivated by greed, and therefore if we appeal to their greediness, then they will accomplish great things. If we're not allowed to appeal to their greed, so then they will not be able to accomplish great things because they'll have no motivation to do so. Okay, that is a problem. Not telling you I'm a Democrat, but just telling you that is a problem. Okay, so that's in terms of Rav Moshe from yesterday. Now, I want to go to get to a little bit of similar stuff from Rav Avadia Yosef today. Equal time for this Friday.
Thank you for bringing forward the people out.
I'm fine for that to happen. Okay, again, I don't have enough copies of it, so a few people have to share. No one wants to thank. I feel very wanted today.
You
don't
need to read, just follow it.
Yeah. Just follow and not incoherently.
Yeah,
rock back and forth.
Yeah.
Not silently. Okay. So this is a very interesting tour. Ravadi has a couple of interesting tours. This is one of them. And it says, Sheila, the question. Now should see him in Mudava Beit Sefi, so if a child finished his studies in an elementary school, meaning finished late grade. Haim Adif Ramshich Limudo B'Yeshiva Tichonit is a better way to continue to learn in a yeshiva high school, where of course they teach secular studies. Or, and the kind of mission of Chazal in order to fulfill Chazal's Mishnah and Sef Dovah. Yoach V'Tal Mishnah V'Yerachereth that Torah is good when it is accompanied with the way of the world. Or Adif, or is it better Ramshich Limudo B'Yeshiva Kedosha is a better way to continue to learn in a holy yeshiva. Asher Bokho as Ma Mukta Shalimu Torah Vatan, which to all of one's time is just devoted to learning Torah. Now before you see Rav Avadia's answer, you should know what it is. What do you think his answer is before we see it?
Something about burning in hell.
What? What do you think it is? No?
No.
No, you should go to high school, right? Is it obvious? Right. So, that's how we get to see how we get there.
It should not.
Yeah. Okay. Tshuva. Response. Shahir b'kiddushin, learn the kiddushin, of which we saw already yesterday. Amar Rabbi Noroi. Rabbi Noroi said, Meniach harikol um nishvayim, I forsake all crafts in the world. Ve'enim alamin es b'ni elot, I only want to teach my son's letter. L'chayro, it would seem, the divrei Rabbi Noroi, that the words of Rabbi Noroi, Eile, these words of Rabbi Noroi, soitzim, they contradict the Master Shahir b'avatar, which we learn the Masech to Avos, the parent base, which the base. Rabbi Gamliel, Venosha, Rabbi Yudah, Nasi, Yomer, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yudah, Nasi, said, Yotet Talmud Torah in their Acharet. We're supposed to have to learn Torah and have a trade. She Yash Neh Meshach of the Bones too, because the toil in both of them caused the person's diminished capacity to fit. The Chol Torah also says, Chol Torah Shem HaMelacha, any Torah which has no labor, company in it, this means physical labor, right? So it says, Seifah B'Teilah, eventually the person's going to give up, and it's going to come to sin as a result. Ubrach is the Kiddushin, and Ubrach says in the Kiddushin, look for a life with a woman you love. So the part that's the part of King Kohelet. So the one that says, if it goes on a woman, literally, so you should know for Shem Shukai, just like a father has to marry off his son, so you have to teach him a trade. And if this Isha Sharata, this woman you love is a metaphor for Torah, well, that's the shame. You have to learn from the Torah. You have to learn from the Torah. Just like you have to teach Torah, you have to teach them all the trade. Rabbi Yomer, it says, Kol Hashenu Melamed, it's no umdus, anybody that doesn't teach his son a crap, Kilo Melamed, the list is as if it teaches him banditry. Pesach Rashi, and the Rashi says, Shashenu Melamed, he's punished, he doesn't have from what to sustain himself. All you may do, Melashim, is ability to go and rob other people. Ube brachas daris barakabara, and brachas barakabara says, Lola Melamed, on them, it's no umdus, Kol Hashenu Melamed, teach his son a craft which is light and clean. The Chayim Moon so to said, Godel Anenem Yigiyo, greater son who enjoys the fruits of his own labor, Mirei Shamayim from somebody that's off heaven. Shema says, Yigiyo Katecho Kisochel. It says that if you do the toil of your work, you eat, Ashrecho, you're praiseworthy, but so love and it's good for you. Of the Suicide, also the Suicide says, Meshachin Abonis the Shabbos, you can make a shidduch for your daughter on Shabbos, and also, Rav the Sefer Rav the Umnus, you teach your son, Tanakh, or whatever sefer is, Mishnayos, and you can also teach him a trade. Well, Peter tried at Shabbos, how can you teach him to be a carpenter on Shabbos? This is obviously not the practical part of carpentry, right? It's the theoretical part of carpentry. What? Ashkofa part of carpentry, yeah. So, Peter's Rashi says, this is not part of the prohibition of dealing with your own stuff on Shabbos. He mitzvah to love doing this because it's a mitzvah to teach his son a craft. Shneimer says, "Reichaim ima isha sharata. Look for life with the woman you love." Kloima, meaning lamod umus learn a craft. Shetia mimena yach shetich mimena yach imatera with which you can survive to give a Torah outcome at the end of the rush. Ulam, but the situation looks grim. Looks like you got to go out to work, right? At least don't look to study. Have no fear. Have no fear. Ulam nireh. Nevertheless, it seems. Shadvarim Magim, that these things reach from Mashashina Babai to that which you learned through the Braisa. The Braisa says, Son of us. This again, we have this yesterday, Rabbi Yishmon, Rabbi Yishim, Rabbi Yishim. But Tazan Echad says you should gather your brain. Matam Muloma, the second stanza of Shema. Matam Muloma, why does the thing say this? Tishne, my God says, Boy, you almost say, but there is a meat picha, that this Torah should not desist from your mouth. You are called like yourself, it doesn't mean literally, Tam Loma goes after the Nechel. No, it says you have to gather your grain. And hey, Bohem, Minot Dercheret. Treat your grain with the custom of Dercheret, means a harvest and planting. Dere Shmuel is with Rabbi Shmuel. Peus Rashi, Rashi explains, Hanei Bohem, Minot Dercheret, which means conduct yourself with the way of the world. She'im Yisparach Labriot, because when a person goes to beg, and needs assistance, so then he won't deal with his work. Actually, he's going to stop learning Torah as well because he's going to be too discombobulated to learn. The pastor first will harvest his time of harvest. The land of Shazira, and he's going to plant the Shazira, and he's going to harvest time and harvesting. The doctor Shazira is going to plant with time of fledging. The Zoya Shazira, and he's going to winnow when there's wind. What's going to be with Torah? Who's going to learn? By the way, I think I told some of you. There's a famous one.
Who knows? It's such turnover. Maybe you heard it from me.
Did I tell you the question? Does anybody remember the question of the Rambam in his introduction to his rhyme? The Rambam in his introduction to his rhyme says the world was created for the great intellectual giants. So he asked, why are the rest of the morons created? Okay? Why are you and I created? The numbskulls. What are we here for? The Rambam has two answers. Do you remember the two answers?
I forget.
One answer the Rambam gives is because even the great intellectuals have a need for human companionship. And therefore, the rest of the created for human companionship for the great scholars, otherwise it would be a very lonely place.
And the great scholars don't
have people,
because only God.
They what?
Because only God, he didn't really see
all the
people.
Yeah, right, but people did come in to see him, so therefore he had that fulfills him. The other reason is because, like Rav Shimon Chai says, if I have to do my own cleaning, sewing, purchasing, most of which I do have to do. But anyway, if I had the old days before you had all these labor saving devices, you have to do all this stuff yourself and planting and harvesting. So what are you going to learn? The intellectuals never be able to be the intellectuals. So therefore, everybody else was okay in order to be the support staff of those people who are going to be the intellectuals. Okay, so those are the two reasons. It's very similar to what is being said here, right? That Rav Shimon Chai says, if you guys do all this stuff, you're not going to have time to learn. So therefore, what do we have in this world in order to allow us to have time to learn?
Workers.
Non-Jews. Right. So we have non-Jews who do the work for us in order that we should be able to learn. That's Rav Shimon Chai's approach. That's not a mitzvah to work. It's just, you know, a bummer which certain people have to do, and if they can avoid it, they should avoid it if they actually can.
So you fulfill that mitzvah, huh?
Right.
So you and I
have explained
that mitzvah quite well.
The mitzvah of avoiding work?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've been doing it for much longer than you.
Yeah.
Okay, I am a true star at avoiding work. Okay, so
I'll
the...
I'll take note of my mitzvah for that.
Okay, the... So there, Shimon says that Rabbi Zmashi told him, "Mitzvah Shemacham, when the Jews do the will of God, blast them not just by their hand, and the work is done by others." Shemai says, "V'am du zogin, foreigners will arise, the road sochem, and they will graze their sheep. Uvnei nechar and non-Jews will come, yikarim the karmechem. They're going to be farmers, and they're going to be the people who tend your vineyards." One second. Rabbi Zmashi ain't only Mitzvah Shemacham. Whenever we don't do the will of God, then the last one, not to say the after, then we have to do our own work. We don't have the guardians do it for us. Rabbi said, "Hatayu tukav shmuel." Many people did Rabbi Shmuel, and they collected their grain. But also the other, and it worked for them. Rabbi Shimon Chai, many people did Shimon Chai, but also the other, it didn't work for them. Yeah.
Real quick, I remember it says like in the time of Mashiach.
One people say real quick, it means real slow.
All right. During the time of Mashiach, they said that it was written that. All the Jews will have a permanent Shabbat, which means that all the Goyim are going to be doing all the work for us, right?
Might be taking a little.
Well, alright. Okay, what they say here is Jews shouldn't work, Jews should concentrate on Torah, let all the Goyim work, right? Don't fall asleep from here, Rabbi.
Exactly, see? Yeah.
Alright, so what about Bishul Israel, Tat Israel?
You see, you're as far as you're in problem with that. We Ashkenazim don't have a problem.
Yeah, all you have to do is light it.
Right.
Just wake up to start the fire.
Right. Mm-hmm. We have that difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim? What?
Which
one? Bishul Yisrael. I love that Jews have to cook. To cook food. Good food. You're not allowed to have a non-Jew cook. I actually had this case.
No,
in
mind. But you can just turn on the stove.
No. That's Ashkenazim. Sephardim, we have to start and finish
the whole thing.
Yeah.
They can't. They,
I agree with that.
But if they had a Friday Arab, maybe they'd be able to do it inside a Friday Arab. But
Mr. Hesser was a business owned by a Jew.
They say that the Torah Swanson used to smoke a pipe. And the reason he used to smoke a pipe is because he would go from bakery to bakery, and you know, and lighting the asking for a match to light the pipe in order that he can then throw the match into the fire. In order that the bread should be passed as well.
So
Bishul Yisrael, same thing. My brother did not. Just what I have to tell you down inside. My grandfather, just, you know, people. There's a myth about Europe. You know, I've been so fond of Jews for a reason. My grandfather was a rabbi in Switzerland. It's originally from Lithuania. He was in Warsaw in 1939, on the eve of the Second World War. That comes before the war started, and he wrote a letter to his friend in the Telzichim, Lithuania. He said in restaurants, there are 40, in the Warsaw, there are 40 restaurants. There is only two kosher ones, Jewish-owned restaurants, two ones which are kosher, and only one of them is actually reliable. So can you imagine, you know, people think that the Warsaw, like Monty, right? There are dozens of kosher restaurants, the kosher bakeries, the Warsaw had many, many from Jews. No. There's a big problem in Europe. So there were literally 38 of the 40 restaurants, 39, were places where it couldn't eat in Warsaw. So there's...
The 40 were Jewish restaurants?
Yeah, Jewish restaurants. Oh. Yeah, Jewish restaurants where one couldn't eat. Yeah. Like, you know, the kosher style. So therefore the...
What's kosher style? I've never been supposed to...
Anything with corned beef and pickles is kosher.
Right.
It's only sugar, jellies that aren't currently processed.
Yeah, technically kosher pickles aren't kosher.
What?
Kosher pickles aren't kosher.
Most kosher pickles aren't kosher, actually.
No, it's just the style that they...
No, but they would get sued if they actually... If they said kosher pickles and weren't really kosher, they have a problem. That's how it's a big deal to make kosher pickles, so they usually aren't kosher.
Louisiana had it.
What was the problem?
What?
What was the problem with Warsaw? 40 restaurants, you said, only two are kosher.
40 Jewish restaurants.
So 40 Jewish restaurants, two are kosher.
one was reliable.
Only one of them was reliable.
What can be the problem?
Whatever it was.
They kept having Pam as a special
guest. It's a great story. Once was done, one was on the sidetrack here. Great story that there was a rabbi in Chicago many years ago, his name was Rabbi Goldman, not many years ago, he lived a very long life, he was inside in the 90s, well over the age of 100. Anyway, so his son became a conservative rabbi, and he got a smicha from Skokie Yeshiva, which at the time was still the Chicago Yeshiva, in the west side of Chicago, the Hebrew Theological College, and the menial of the yeshiva really didn't want to give a smicha. He really didn't want to give a smicha because he knew this guy shaved with a razor, which was, of course, forbidden by halacha, and he knew that, he was going to, he probably would not end up broke.
Why did somebody shave this razor?
In the 40s?
They
probably went through good electric shavers back
then.
It's not
a kosher way to do
the
same thing.
It's not a kosher, it's a Russia.
Yeah,
sorry,
Russia.
Yeah.
The
Russian way to do
the same thing.
Right?
And this time
it's like there is
no cultural
way. True. Okay. So it's a
Russia.
Well, you never met a Russian in your life?
Like,
Poitikin, Scorchian,
he got
sneezes.
It's like a big deal.
No, it's not a big incredible at all. America was a wasteland back then. So eventually, he did become a conservative rabbi, and obviously there's many people who realized that would happen back then. He says later on in the book, at first when he became a conservative rabbi, he wouldn't drive to shul on Shabbos. But one day he was walking to shul in the rain, it was really raining hard, and one of his congregants came by in his car and rolled down the window and said, "Enjoy your walk, Rabbi," and drove on to shul. And so that day he decided, "I'm also going to drive to shul on Shabbos." Anyway, so this guy back in the 40s, so he actually was, obviously the menial didn't want to give him smicha, although ultimately he did get the smicha. So once the menial saw him during the 9 days, eating in a restaurant fleishig. Right? So he made him fleishig in a restaurant during the 9 days. So the menial was also in this restaurant. Now don't ask me what restaurants looked like back then, obviously this is the Warsaw example, but the menial came in and had ice cream. So obviously this is a restaurant just serving on one side meat and the other side milk. I don't know exactly how this came together. So he knew that this rabbi, this soon-to-be Rabbi Goldman, knew, he's in trouble because the menial saw him eating meat during the 9 days. So after the menial left, so he went up to the owner of the restaurant, whoever the owner of the restaurant was, and said, "Tell me what's in the ice cream." It turned out that the ice cream was not kosher. Had gelatin in it, which was a big question. I love gelatin, yes, but let's assume it's not kosher. So the next day, the menial calls him into his office. Rabbi Greenberg was his name. He says, "Listen, Goldman, is it permissible to eat meat during the 9 days?" And so Goldman says, "Ask him, Rabbi Greenberg, is it ever permissible to eat non-kosher ice cream?" And Rabbi Greenberg was not able to prevent him from getting smicha. Anyway, so... So, how do we understand from Bishul? From Bishul,
what
is
Goyim going to be doing for Jews?
Oh, right, so Goyim are going to be doing for Jews. Okay, so thank you. So, I guess the Goyim are not going to be doing the cooking. Or somehow, maybe Chazal at that time will reverse the prohibition on Bishul Akum and say that since Goyim at that time will be more religious, in other words, they'll serve our God, so therefore, perhaps the prohibition will no longer apply. Okay, so in any event, so the Shimon Chai said that people, when Jews really serve Hashem, so then the Goyim will do our work for them. Abai said, a lot of people did Rabbi Shimon work, and a lot of people did Rabbi Shimon, and it didn't work, meaning they weren't able to let other people do their work for them. From Rabbi Yehudah says, the wrong quote here, I'm sorry, the name of Menachos, there's a little plus line we're up to now, in the second paragraph, the name of Menachos, Amar Rabbi Yehudah, Mishim Baruch Hai, Menachos Rabbi Yehudah says the name of Shem Baruch Hai, Afil, what we say, yes, Afil will call them El Kriya Shema Shachris Varvus. Even a person only read Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening, Kiyen is sustained, Lo Yom Mishsefa Torah Zemi Picha. He can sustain, as he said, the Torah should never be missing from your mouth. Shod and Dama, It's a very famous Gemara. Shama ben Doma ben Achaytish Rabbi Shmuel mi Rabbi Shmuel. Ben Doma, the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, asked Rabbi Shmuel, Kigoin ani, something like me, Shalamadati kol ha-Torah kula. I learned all the Torah. So, I learned everything there was to learn the Torah. What is my halacha? Malvim machok mal yivanis. Can I go out and learn Greek wisdom? So Rabbi Shmuel said according to this Gemara, he said, told him, send him this book. Well, he understands that the Torah is empty. This book of the Torah should never be missing from your mouth. The gates of a yom of a laila, you should be involved and thinking about it night, day and night. Say you don't go out and check. Sha'ena lo mina yom v'lo mina laila. Find a day which is time which is neither day nor night, and ulama v'achach me'yavanis. And that time you can learn Greek wisdom, right? Well, along with some of the assumption the Rabbis make is that Greek wisdom here means any secular studies. And saying that, well, since there's the case of a Yom HaLaila, spoken about third day and night, so therefore, when do you learn Greek wisdom? Only when it's neither day nor night.
So guess, dusk and dawn.
Right, I guess if you hold like Rabbein Tam and you have 72 minutes, so that gives you a long time to learn Chach Le'Vanu. But then, what?
I mean, like you went to space, you don't know.
No. You guys are creative. I got to hand it to you. Okay? How much do you get? You meant to have to go to Alaska for it. Okay. That's the university in Alaska. That's So it says Rav Avadia, Rikshabi and Yaakov Shalom, one of the commentaries that Shemikan Bukhar Shabi is Shmuel Mako. It says at the beginning here that Shmuel is lenient. From Parashat Pasuk, it says the Pasuk is below Yomush, that the Torah should not be missed from your mouth, so the Bible of Kriya Shema Shachar Tzavis is sufficient to read Shema in the morning and the evening. So the Rabbi Shmuel Machmir, I'm sorry, so then Rabbi Shimon is the one who's reading it, and he says that it's enough to read night and day, and Rabbi Shmuel is the one who's stringent, or Parashat Vorn Kitzava, and he says, no, you have to learn all day and all night, not just Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening, but all day and all night. Those mamash contradicts each other. Rabbi Shmuel Bracha said, you're supposed to work. And here Rabbi Shmuel is saying, you have to learn Torah all day and all night. And in Bracha, Rabbi Shimon Melechai said, no, don't go out to work. And here he's saying, all you have to do is learn Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening. That's his question.
So the one guy who says you have to learn Torah all day and all night, is he advocating that, like, everybody has to be a rabbi or everybody has to, like, always be... You couldn't even do anything else if you studied Torah all day and all night.
Good question. This seems though, you're right.
Yeah.
It seems that what he's saying though, that in fact he's saying if you got to work, you got to work. But if once you're free from intellectual activity, then that intellectual activity has to be devoted to prayer.
Okay.
That's what the answer I think will be. Okay. So he said. So the Yaakov says, it's difficult. Again, we're reading inside. Rabbi Shmuel Machmir the first event was the brachah is clever. The brachah says the opposite. Rabbi Shmuel Mer on anybody minute derech eretz. He says you should be turning derech eretz. So closely drawn with sobes banom to bow, plant and harvest the right time. Shimbechai Mer or Shimbechai says no. Shalach says derechem. Other people do the work. But first for yom which capacity says you have to learn all day and all night. Okay, you should go to Chaim Abu Lafia. Also this whoever that is at the eighth lawyer. And we can bring a point here, a noteworthy point, in the Tosfos of Yira Chosid, which is one of the Sfarim HaBrachos. Shiruchai Omer Chulei, why the Shvim Shum Sfirulei? He says not because the Shvimen that Rabbi Shimachai holds Shiruchai V'Liyamod Yemel Vayla. It's not an obligation to learn day and night. It's not required. Shvim Menachos Omer Rabbi Shimon, because Menachos Rabbi Shimon says Shafiru L'Kara El Kriya Shema. Shachas Arvus, he says that even if you only read Shema in the morning and evening, Kiyem Lo Yomush. He fulfills what he had to do. And the mitzvah, the Ba'am was a Kamar Mibnei Pitzel Torah. Just saying it's a mitzvah to do it in order not to be Mavakal Torah. Not that you have to learn Torah, but you shouldn't be...
Forsaking.
Thank you, good word. You shouldn't be forsaking Torah. So that's why he said it. That's a good word. Okay, the Chen Kos the Seis Rosh Ham. And that says the Rosh also writes a similar thing. So then Rav Avadia brings down here in the parentheses, Vayin over Ran Nidorim, Chesem Alf, the Ran, the Rabbi Nissim, one of the Mishraim, right? Shukotin writes, nearly blocked out for the mitzvah of Kriyashma Shavuot Arvit. He says a different shot. He says, Kriyashma Shavuot in the morning is not a sufficient. Shreyamu v'shinatam. It says that v'shinatam levanecho. We say this wrong. Shudivay Torah mechudotin v'picha. That divay Torah should be sharp in your mouth. If a person asks you questions, davar something, don't mumble and answer him, but rather ask him forthright. And boy, they say, do say Shema, night and day, then how can you ask the person forthright? Now, you can see from this clip that the Rambam is not a chosid. But the Rambam is a chosid, he would say, of course. Say Shema in the evening, in the morning, any question you ask is answered, right? Because Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's the answer to all questions. But the Ron didn't hold that way. Ron obviously held... The Ron held, obviously, that you have to give an intellectual, sophisticated answer to every question, not just the answer that Hashem Echad. I see that.
Something
right.
Pideistic.
What?
Okay.
Pideism is a 14th, 15th century medieval authority. Okay? So he says, therefore it says, Chodom Chai Vroom of Atoya Tera B'yom, Uvalai could be kochel there for each person's lunatara day night as much as he can. Vine should do a bath, etc. Ba'akushim Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel, and the question, Ba'akushim Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel, skipping the practice of Seal, the Chorei Shlomar, one could say, Shem Rabbi Shmuel, you can rock the tzach panos, as I answered you before. Rabbi Shmuel only allowed his work for the purpose of making a living. Ha'bolim ha'chof me'avonis, but to learn Greek wisdom, so the tzach panos was not necessary for a panos, although perhaps he didn't allow that. However, Yerushalmi asked this question explicitly. Esau said, "Shalom, Rabbi Shua." They asked Rabbi Yehoshua, not Rabbi Shmuel. Asked Rabbi Shua, "Mao shi'amid on the b'nei chokhmi yavanis? Can a person teach us some Greek wisdom?" On the lamp, he said to them, "Same, similar as we see in the Bavli, you medena b'shal she'ena lo yom lo laila. You should learn at time, which is neither day or night. Shnei ma'ar be'gisa bo yom laila. It says you have to learn day or night." But honey, and then Yerushalmi himself asked. Didn't we learn? Rabbi Shmuel says, "Uvacharta b'chayim." You have to choose life. What does he choose life? Zu umnus. You have to have a craft. Me'ata, and you say, "I'm going to start day and night." Ye also real lami b'no umnus. You should never be able to teach your son a craft. We're up to the second page. Begin to see what says. Vagisva yom alai says, "I'm going to start 9 days." Elam Rabbi Yehonah. Rabbi Yehonah said, "The reason why now is teach chachmi avonis is mitnayim esperus." Because people will come to, sorry, it's a hard word to translate. People will come to be informers to the government. Chokhmah Yevonis, according to one thing in the Gemara, was not actually Greek wisdom, but it was this kind of code language, a secret language. It wasn't even real Greek. It's like, you know, pig Greek, whatever it was. So the people would want to speak to each other in a secret way, which nobody else would understand. They'd speak or communicate in Chokhmah Yevonis. So therefore, Chokhmah Yevonis was a very narrow prohibition, specifically made on teaching people this type of means of communication because of potentially devastating results. Right? Nimsa, created by the Shamiko Shehedi, Royomo Shulusmach Ba'amo. So therefore, it really has to do with the contradictions of the Torah. No, of course, we'll have to learn Greek wisdom according to this. Now we'll have to learn that specific Greek wisdom, which is called that specific language or communication, which is called Greek wisdom. But other things you're allowed to learn. Okay, Lamaisa, I think we're going to have to stop here. We're going to come back to this Mitzvah Shem on Monday.